Welcome to the Band of Gamers podcast, episode number 7. My name is Greylock3491, and this week I'm joined by my good friend, DBQ Hams.
Hey guys, I'm glad to be out of my echo chamber and back on the podcast.
Well, welcome back, DB, and we're also hoping to be joined by Zeus Adamus later in the show. So with that, let's go ahead and get started like we do every week and talk about what we've been playing. What have we been doing with our game consoles and our computers? And we will start this week with DB. So DB, what have you been playing this week?
So last week I mentioned that I had an invite to Fable Legends, the closed beta. I probably am not supposed to talk a whole lot about it, but since it says closed beta Fable Legends on my gamer tag as I'm playing, I don't think it's that secret. It was only a real limited time playing it last week, and they've opened it back up again this weekend, and I only got a couple games in of that, but it's definitely a beta, which is perfectly fine, and I was excited. Let's just say I was excited that they opened it up again. I want to play some more, and really interested in the character design and the gameplay, so I won't say a whole lot until it's finished, but I'm glad to be kind of peeking at it and poking around with it. This week Gray, have you played Fable before or heard more about this?
Well, I was going to ask you, so you're doing the beta for Fable Legends, top secret. Have you played any of the previous Fable games?
So I have played the original Fable and Fable 3. So this is where, being not a 360 owner last generation and having a PC meant that I don't think Fable 2 ever came out, or maybe it was Windows Vista exclusive like Halo 2. I've played some Fable 3. I like that world. I like the design of it. You know, for all of Peter Molyneux's promises about loving the dog and crying and all the other pieces that go with it, I think the character design and the world creation is really kind of neat. And so that's why I was excited, or at least interested, to kind of sign up for the beta and poke around in that world. So Fable Legends takes place 500 years or so before the first game, so it separates itself enough. The gameplay is, I don't know how much, I'll say that the gameplay is very much like the multiplayer of Dragon Age. That it's a four-person co-op against one, four against one, kind of like Evolve was, but you seem to be kind of fighting through some waves of a village or a dungeon, kind of like in Dragon Age, before you get to a boss character. So that's kind of the extent of what I know so far. Maybe I'll have more to share as I keep playing around with it. Have you played them, Gray? Have you played any of the Fables?
Yeah, I'm a big Fable fan. I've really enjoyed it. It was one of those games I felt like I could sit back and just play and with no stress, take my time. There was no rush. I always thought all the Fable games had a great climax. I was never one of those guys who got too much into, you know, having a pet or having a wife or having a family. To me, it was all about the quests and progression and just slowly moving forward towards the end of the game. But I really have enjoyed all three of them. And I'd love to see all three of them remastered, kind of like a la carte Master Chief collection on the Xbox One. I would love to have that. But in any case, yeah, I it's very interesting. I'd love to hear what you think about it when you can go public and talk more about your experiences. And I can confirm everything you've said, I knew about 6 months ago. It was kind of all out in the press. So you're safe.
Phew, thanks for the coverage there. But yeah, I guess I'll say, you know, I'm glad to be part of it, and I was excited this week when I got the email to be able to play some more. So I think that's a good sign, without saying anything more. This week was a crazy week at work. I had a lot of stuff going on, and so I fell back into some comfort gaming a little bit. But I knew that this week on Wednesday or Thursday on the 23rd, so Thursday, that Project Spark had the Conker's Bad Fur Day coming, or Conker's Reunion that came out. Conker's Bad Fur Day was an original N64 game. It's a Rare property. It was redone and remastered for the original Xbox, I think, or was it 360? So Conker's Bad Fur Day Reunion is built in Project Spark. And so I had picked up Project Spark back in the fall on like a Best Buy deal of the day. So it came with the starter bundle and things like that. If you're an Xbox One player and you haven't poked around at Project Spark, it's a free download to at least see some of the stuff that people are creating. I really enjoyed Little Big Planet, but never really got too much into the player-created worlds and felt they were... I wasn't really happy with the tool set. Project Spark is really deep, and the amount of stuff that people are creating is really interesting. So I played around just through some of the missions in Project Spark in the regular game, and then when Conquer came out, I played some of that. And it's fun. You know, it's $5 for just the Conquer episode, or it's $10 for the Conquer episode and the other episode of like a Knight's Quest type of thing from Project Spark, along with being able to have all the Conquer creation tools. So having the character to put into other build your own worlds and all the assets, the art assets and sound effects. So if you ever even wanted to think about poking around at it, you know, and I guess to me for $10, it was a nice nod to let people know that 3D platforming still could be interesting, that character platforming, as somebody who grew up in the Nintendo and Nintendo 6 SNES days, you know, character platforming is certainly ingrained there for better or for worse, but it was fun. It very much feels like a 3D platformer. You know, you're moving stuff around and you've got the camera control on the stick, but it's a neat world. The art design, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. The art design of Project Spark fits very well with that kind of cartoony 3D world. So it was comforting. It was in a stressful week, it was nice to kind of go back to feeling like a kid again and playing a cartoon. So on the flip side of that, one of the other games I played this week was definitely not a kid's game, which was Assassin's Creed Chronicles China, the new new download game for Xbox One, PS4, and PC. So it's a 2D, 2.5D kind of stealth action game, and that was neat mechanics. You know, if you've played, Gray, did you ever play Mark of the Ninja? Is that a game that you had played before on 360?
No, I haven't. Okay, and a matter of fact, this game, the reviews on it haven't been any good. So at least that's what I'm seeing. So I'm interested in what you have to say about it, because I have not played it.
So I saw some of the reviews, and they were really all over the map, right? It's like some in the 60s and some in the 80s. You know, it's from the reviews, it sounds like a 4 to 5 hour game. I'm really enjoying it. You know, I'm only a couple levels in. I went back and it feels kind of like Mark of the Ninja, which is very much a stealth kind of action-y game where you're hiding in shadows. But Mark of the Ninja, you're really kind of squishy as a character. You can't get into a fight very well. And here, you're not as strong as, like, you know, Ezio or in Unity, where you can kind of just hack and slash your way and parry. So you can maybe take a couple hits of damage, but it gives you a little more sword play. The art style is really neat. You know, I was a fan of Okami on PS2 and the remasters that have come out, you know, that kind of distinct art style. And so it fits in kind of that Asian art kind of style in a action platformer. So it's nice stealth. I've never really been a stealth guy in the Assassin's Creed 3D games. And maybe it's just the 3D world, but I'm used to the vision cones in Mark of the Ninja, or even the vision cones back on Metal Gear Solid on the PS1. So I'm enjoying it. You know, if you're hesitant about it, like all UB games, I bet there's going to be a sale at some point in time, but I would pick it up. It's been fun for me to play. You know, again, if you have a lot of stuff sitting in your back file, I wouldn't rush out for it. But if you like Mark of the Ninja, if you like kind of that kind of stealth aspect, you might enjoy this. So what kind of turned you off from it, Gray, in terms of you've been reading some of the reviews?
No, I just noticed, I was surprised because there was so much going on with the last two Assassin's Creeds, you know, when they were released and the drama around them. And and the issues and the patches, and it was part of that whole slew around when the Master Chief came out, and comparing what happened with those two games and with Destiny, how Destiny launched, and it was almost zero problems, and Master Chief and Assassin's Creed had Unity had all these other issues. So it was interesting to see another Assassin's Creed game come out and have such a mixed review. You think it would have been polish, polish, polish after what happened with the last game. So, and I just full disclosure, I haven't played any Assassin's Creed games ever. So I'm not, I can't make up my own opinion on this. I've never played it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a whole lot more polished than Unity was when it launched. You know, there's no teeth and bone faces. You know, there's a few glitches that I've read about, but so far I haven't experienced any of them. It's run really smooth for me. So I've been playing, kind of some throwback games, some games that I can't fully talk about, but I've also been playing, with some of the House of Wolves stuff that we'll talk about later, I'm sure. I've gone back and done my Nightfalls in Destiny. My third character has risen from a level 6 to I'm now at 14, so trying to get up and keep moving there. So that's been my week. How about you, Gray? What have you been playing?
Basically, I started the week by playing the game called Let's Move the Server. So I took Friday off last week, and I moved CAG, casualadultgamers.com, and the CAG NFL site, which was still running in vBulletin, and I moved them to a brand new dedicated server, and that took all day Friday, all day Saturday, and almost all day Sunday. And that's why I wasn't on the podcast last week, because I was just tired and I needed time off.
Yeah, thank you for all that work. The migration looks great. I was happy to fill in, but yeah, you really put a lot of time in, so thanks, Gray.
Well, now I want to thank everybody who makes the all these websites, casualadultgamers.com, the CAG NFL site, the people who go to those sites and post, and those are really the people we should thank because they make these communities what they are. We are closer to having our very own Band of Gamers website, so that's coming. And when it's ready, we'll announce it here on the show. But after I was done doing that, this week I didn't really get a lot of time to game, so I went back to my staple, Destiny, and I played some with my good buddy Macebite, who was on one of our episodes in the past, and we did the daily and the weekly on Wednesday night, and I was excited to get a hunter's chest from Xur this weekend, so that was good. I was looking for a exotic hunter's chest, and he finally brought one. It's not the best one, but I'm glad to have it, and glad to finally have one of those and spend my strange coins on that. So having a lot of fun. It does to me seem like in the Destiny level 30s, they seem harder now. Maybe I'm just getting older, but DBQ, I don't know if you've noticed this, but since the last patch, it does seem like the level 30 stuff is hotter. And it was Mace and I did one last week. It was just crazy. We have done this one several times over the course of the months, and then it was just extremely harder. It's just a level 30 strike should be a level 30 strike, and I don't know why it would change. I mean, the only thing on was juggler, I think. So I don't, DB, have you noticed the strikes any, are they any harder now for you than they were pre-patch?
It seems like a few of the mechanics switched up a little bit as I was running the Nightfall last night, actually. A few things seemed to be a little different than they had been in terms of the timing and some of those pieces. But I haven't noticed a whole lot different in terms of difficulty. Certainly, anytime that light switch is on, I feel that real quick when those punches come from even something as a simple drag. So no, I'm not sure, but it would make sense that they keep kind of tweaking it. If they tuned down the Mars strike a little bit, maybe they tuned up some of the other ones.
Yeah, I read about that, heard about that too. I guess the last thing I played was try to find a cheap set of Xbox 360 controllers for your grandchildren, So they kept borrowing my wired controllers, and I was like, I'm not very happy to have my wired controllers. Who knows what will happen to them? So I went on a quest to find some inexpensive Xbox 360 controllers that I could give them, that they could take down to their apartment and play Minecraft with, or play what's the other game they have? Oh, I got Lego Star Wars, really inexpensive last year, so they were learning to play that. And I'm actually going to write a review on that and put some affiliate links in on the website on Casual Dough Gamers, later in the month. But yeah, I mean they really love these new inexpensive. I think I ended up paying $25 a piece for them. Xbox 360 wired controllers, so no worrying about batteries or charging batteries or whatnot. Anything else you want to add to that, DB?
Not really. I mean, I think last week I had mentioned playing a mobile game called Spirit Lords, which is kind of a Diablo-y on a tablet or a phone. I had been playing it for a while on my phone, but it's just the screen was so small, so I moved to a tablet on it, and I'm still enjoying it, but if you remember how I talked about Diablo, where I kept playing it but didn't necessarily feel fulfilled afterward, I'm hitting that same stage of I see the progression, I see why somebody would want to keep going, but it's not very fulfilling. So, it's okay. I gave him $5 to get some good gear and stuff, and I don't feel like, it's not really a pay to win, and they haven't really milked me in terms of timing of spend more to not wait 8 minutes or whatever. So, it was good game design, and I'm glad for those developers. So, if you haven't read, there's a good Polygon article on the game called Spirit Lords.
Now, let me ask you a question, DB. You've mentioned Polygon several times. What are your staples for reading? Like my staples, I'll just go out there and say it. What I try to read every week or every weekday if I can, is I try to hit IGN, GameSpot, and Game Informer. What are your staples for reading on game news?
Well, this is pretty good then. So we have some differences here. So I've been a GameSpot person for, I remember their original design back in the late 90s. So but really most of the time my daily check-ins are with Polygon, because I like a lot of the editors there that have been at other places. US Gamer, Jeremy Parrish is one of the big editors there, and he was big over at 1UP, back when 1UP was going strong or even existed. And then my third spot is probably Giant Bomb. Those are some former GameSpot guys there at Giant Bomb, and that's a regular podcast that I listen to there, along with their news. And then I pick up bits and pieces here and there of IGN, because they're a big outlet. But for the most part, those are my big three that I cover.
Do you get any gaming magazines in the mail? I used to, over the years, I've subscribed to so many different magazines. Most of them have gone defunct, and then some of them you're required to go into the store to renew. So of course they have not renewed because I'm busy and I usually don't want to go shopping after a long day of work. Do you still get anything in the mail? Any magazines in the mail? Gaming magazines?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that one. I get lots of magazines every time I buy a game at GameFly, and they always offer those, $2 year subscriptions. But in terms of gaming magazines, no, not really anymore. I had Game Informer for a little bit, but that has waxed on, laxed a long time ago. I was a Nintendo Power subscriber up until the end, and actually did the first year of Nintendo Force, which was a fan-created gaming mag, very similar to, in that same style of Nintendo Power. It's Nintendo Force. They've got a second year out. They did a Kickstarter. It was successful. But I haven't resubscribed there, and part of that was because my kids love to read Nintendo news, just like I did when I was a kid. And the other only other pieces I've had is I've had kind of gaming collections of, trying to think of what is the Kill Switch is a magazine where there's a lot of kind of gaming reflections and long form essays, but that is something I end up picking up on digital through things like story bundles and things like that. So no real kind of gaming news, I think, right? At this stage, news gets broke on the internet or on Twitter versus the monthly mag that shows up.
Are you guys able to
Yeah.
hear me at all?
Hey, Zeus, welcome to the show. Hey, tell us what you've been playing this week.
So, haven't got a lot of gaming done this week. Just as the previous week was wrapping up, I was playing a lot of Super Smash Bros. And Gunman Clive 2 on my Nintendo 3DS. So I was still playing a little bit of that as the week started, and then while I was on travel this most of my gaming was actually being done on my iPad, and I've kind of gotten a refresh buzz for tower defense games. So most recently I've been playing a lot of Field Runners in iOS.
So is that a good? I've been looking for a good tower defense game to play on my iPad. You would recommend that?
Yeah, Field Runners is pretty awesome.
Zeus, so you were saying that you played Gunman Clive 2. I played through all of the first one. Really enjoyed that art style. I've seen bits and pieces on the other one. How are you liking it? Did you play the first one? How does it compare?
So Gunman Clive, I did not play Gunman Clive 1. So this is my first exposure to the title. Gunman Clive 2 is pretty cool. It's a little weird because it's not kind of my kind of staple as far as game type goes. So it's been pretty interesting. I wrote a bit about it on my personal blog a couple weeks ago. It's neat because it has this neat kind of change of pace. So just when I'm at about the point where I might otherwise kind of want to take a break from a platformer, because again, I'm just not a huge platformer gamer. Gunman Clive 2 will kind of change the pace up and throw you some levels that are like kind of 3D from behind flying levels that it has, and it also kind of intermixes some boss levels with kind of the standard levels.
Hey Zeus, just in case our listeners don't know, could you share the URL for your personal blog so everybody can visit it?
If you look for Gearworks Blogger, so GEARWERKZ, and you're looking for that on the Google Blogger Network, then you should find it there.
Oh, all right, great. Thank you. Any other big games you played this week, or was that pretty much what you did?
That was pretty much it. I was on business travel this week, and I did like three different cities and three cities in 4 days. So I was pretty constrained to gaming on, something I could play on the plane.
I hear you. Well, with that said, and everybody got their what they've played out of the way and discussed, let's go into our next section where we talk about items that happened this week in the news in the world of gaming. And for the first article, we're going to pitch it to DBQ. DB, what did you want to talk about this week?
So it's a maybe it's like I was saying, I kind of fell back into some comfort gaming and looking at what was going on this week, and realized on a Gamasutra article that the TurboGrafx-16 turned 25 years old. So I remember I've got a magazine sitting over here on the shelf of video games and computer entertainment, where the TurboGrafx and the Genesis are going head to head with each other. So 25 years ago, the also-ran of the 16-bit console wars, and not going to go a whole lot into TurboGrafx. There's plenty of other good sites out there, podcasts like Retronauts, to talk about TurboGrafx-16, but it's the NEC console, the PC Engine, did really well in Japan, and it came over here really late. It really wasn't a 16-bit system. It was more of an 8-bit system. But that got me thinking about also ran consoles, right? And so this week there was also a Nintendo Direct on Xenoblade Chronicles X. So I really am interested in this game. As we talked about before, about being a Nintendo fan, and Zeus, you just talked about playing Smash Brothers and Xenoblade characters in there. I am kind of excited about this game. I have no idea how Nintendo actually thinks it's going to get published by the end of this year, but the fact that it's this giant world makes it really interesting. Did either of you guys see the any news about Xenoblade Chronicles?
I did. I didn't read anything. How about you, Zeus? I kind of glossed over it because I've never played any of those games. Zeus, did you read anything about it this week?
I sure did, and that was one of those things I couldn't keep up with while I was on the go.
Sure, and it was a relatively short Nintendo Direct, but it covered a lot, kind of like side mission stuff and some of the mechanics and some of the other quests and the mech stuff. Some of the mapping and the ability to throw out. It's going to be kind of neat because these games are kind of large, sprawling RPGs with a massive open world to go in. And they did something that kind of reminds me, as we were talking about Fable at the beginning of the show, Gray, kind of reminds me of that, you know, the highlighted path, right, of knowing where to go, that you could throw out this kind of quest ball, I think they called it, and it would bounce ahead and kind of show you the general direction of what your current active quest is. So I guess the question I have, you know, I think that this is it could be a really amazing game and a nice showcase for the Wii U, but it's a real hardcore gamer type of game. And the Wii U, I'm curious on your guys' thoughts, but for me, I like it. It's fun, but I don't know that it's necessarily a hardcore gamer type of system. Zeus, you were talking about playing Smash Brothers. Do you think that this is a good fit, or is it going to find an audience?
Game style-wise, I think it's a fine fit. The problem I have is, you know, the Wii U is in such a weird place right now in terms of competitive positioning. You know, there are rumors that have leaked that Nintendo may be announcing new hardware, you know, between E3 or TGS. So, you know, and always when that happens, you know, you start questioning titles that are coming to the current platform as to whether, you know, maybe they should just be held for the follow-on. So, I mean, with, you know, Wii U has kind of had a slow uptake overall. If Nintendo is punting and rolling to their next generation, I just wonder, you know, I start to wonder, should they be looking at moving some games into a release cycle for the new hardware to kind of make sure that it has a significant number of good launch titles, since at least from my impression, my feeling is that has been, that was problematic for the Wii U.
Sure, that's been a historic Nintendo struggle of having enough games to launch, or quality games to launch. Gray, you were going to jump in there and say something else in terms of audience for this. Do you have any thoughts?
No, I agree. I think it's going to struggle on the Wii U, and I could be wrong. I don't have a Wii U. I have a Wii. But I just don't... it just doesn't seem like the fan base. I mean, Super Smash Brothers, right? Or Mario Kart 8. Or those are the type of games you expect to sell bazillions on the Wii U. However, something like this, you know, I don't know. It will be a shame if it doesn't, because it definitely is supposed to be a phenomenal game, and it's from a great series. But, you know, yeah, I have to agree with you. I think it's going to struggle to find its place.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how that happens, and you know, what they're counting as a sales success too. You know, maybe it's Nintendo is underwriting it enough with the development that they need it as more of a game to keep the system afloat than a game that's going to sell systems. So, you know, as you were talking about, Zeus, it's that bridge time where we're kind of in that holding pattern where we know something's coming, but they've also said they're not going to talk about next or whatever they're going to call it at E3. And so it'll be really interesting to see what Nintendo does. And maybe, you know, I think as we get closer to E3, that will be some good conversations on this podcast about what we think all three big publishers will do. You know, there's been lots of stuff going on, and Bethesda talked about they've just sent out announcements for their E3 press conference, which is going to happen on a Sunday night before E3, and that's the first time that they're doing it. Bethesda also was in the news this week with their Steam Workshop stuff, that they're starting to do something different there. Zeus, you had a news article about that, right?
It was sometime last week, maybe even the tail end of the week before, the news broke that Valve was going to start allowing developers to charge for mods, which kind of sent certain parts of the PC community up into arms, because historically, of course, you know, PC gamers have kind of become accustomed to mods being free, especially mods that were made by, you know, the user community. So these are mods that are not being released by the first-party developer. So the specific article was press release or interview soundbite from Gabe Newell, the head of Valve, who, you know, just wanted to assure gamers that, hey, you know, we're, as with many things that Valve does, right, you know, we're launching this effort, we're going to see how it goes, and based on how the data looks, you know, we'll decide if this is a bad idea and kill the project, or if the numbers and the dollars indicate that it is something people are interested in, and they'll keep it. The most interesting thing that I saw coming out of the article, prices for the mods are actually set by the original developer slash publisher of the content. You know, I may be saying that wrong. It may be the price share as far as you know, what the mod developer gets out of the sale. So again, you know, just as an example, you know, what that means is that, you know, if you do a Skyrim mod, which is, as far as I understand, is the only mod that paid content is available for, you know, then it's Bethesda or whatever that sets the percentage sharing that any mod developers get out of anything sold on Steam.
I think this is really kind of interesting to, you know, I guess as somebody who was an economics major in college, it'll be really interesting to me to see how this market plays out. You know, I'm not so up in arms with the fact that people might pay for this stuff that they're using. You know, some of the mods that people create, you know, some of the mods I've used for some of the Fallout games are amazing. So people spend a ton of time in it. And if they want to charge for it, you know, I think that's great. It's a good development tool. You know, Valve certainly has, you know, used people, so has Bethesda, used people out of the mod community to work on their projects. Gray, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I agree. I mean, you know, if you spend, I don't know, 120 hours or 240 hours building a mod, it would be nice for you to be able to sell it, whether it's $5 or $10, depending on how much content and play you get to have. I mean, I think it's good. I think it's a good way to reward people who put that kind of effort into creating a mod. And you know, I think the better mods should be able to charge some small amount for.
I wonder too. You know, I think it'll be interesting to see how, if developers start charging different takes or taking different cuts, you know, if the mod communities move from one game to another, that if one publisher is going to be too, you know, want too big of a bite, that modders are not going to be there and go to some place where they can make a little bit of a dip. You know, I think about the people that Steam and Valve have done with Dota and with, what's the other game? Team Fortress. Those games have had user-created stuff that could be sold on a marketplace. Is that correct?
I'm not exactly sure with them.
I think there's been some titles that way. So what are your thoughts? I mean, is it feeling like something that's a good idea, or are you feeling some pushback along with some of the other people?
I'm completely ambivalent to it. You know, I mean, man, I'm on a slippery slope here, but you know it's been a recurring discussion around gamers in the gaming community about, and maybe it's generational, about, you know, gamers having a sense of entitlement, right? That, you know, certain gamers feeling like, you know, they own something rather than the creator, or, you know, feeling like creators owe us things. You know, my feeling is kind of like you said, right? If a person wants to make a mod and they choose to sell it rather than give it away for free, then that's their choice. I don't really understand why anybody would feel that they have some, you know, unspoken requirement that should be imposed upon them, that because PC mods have been largely free in the past, that therefore, you know, all PC mods must remain free in perpetuity. That just kind of doesn't make sense for me. I will also admit, though, that I'm not, you know, other than like maps for Unreal Tournament, like, I just really, you know, mods don't really affect me, because, you know, most of them are made for games that I don't even have time to complete the game's campaign. I mean, much less have a discussion about completing mods. So, you know, historically, the only kind of mods that I play are, you know, when I've played Unreal Tournament, then, you know, I've pulled down maps because, you know, much like games on a console, you need to have, you know, a bunch of maps in your inventory so that you can get into all the multiplayer servers.
Sure, yeah. I've played mods. I used Mod Manager for both the Fallout games. You know, I've had those. And I really enjoyed some of the, amazed at some of the mods that people have built in terms of full companions with dialogue and stuff that have followed me along, and it totally added to my game. Whether or not I would have paid for that up front, I don't know. I probably might have chipped in a few dollars for it on a second playthrough, because I would have wanted to experience what the creators did in the first place. I've also played Torchlight 2 with, you know, its Steam Workshop support, and the mod community there has made that game so much more robust, you know, that they've done all kinds of things that make that game a whole lot of fun. You know, it's a hack and slash Diablo type of game, but the ability to keep throwing new characters or new dungeons and all kinds of stuff in gives it a whole nother sense of life that it wasn't there. Again, whether or not I'd pay for that when I never made my way through the entire game in the first place, I don't know. You know, that's a good question. It'll be interesting to see. Good article.
Well, for me, I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of times I won't buy the DLC, like especially Call of Duty, those type of games, or Battlefield games. I won't buy the DLC just for that same reason, because I barely have enough time to get through the initial game and play the initial map. So I do think, but again, you know, if you're passionate about making a mod and spending all that time, other people are passionate about that game. You know, if you come out with something that's great, they're going to want it, and they're going to spend money on it. Although I think it's, you know, trying to get $5 or $10 for something, it would have to be a, you know, almost a total modification or a huge mod, you know, to get that kind of dollars out of it. But no, I don't, you know, I think it's good that they're trying it out. At least the option's out there. Well, with that, guys, I'm going to move into our final news story here, which is my segment, where I talk about all the things I shared as I read the news throughout the week on, I always share them on the Casual Adult Gamers Facebook group, which you're all welcome to join, all your listeners. And it's just an easy way to share things that I've seen in the morning over coffee. And the first thing I want to talk about is the Halo 5's Guardians GameStop commercial. Now, this is a very fast commercial. I mean, it's 60 seconds, but the action in it is just nonstop. And I'm okay. I mean, if you can play the game that fast, I'm absolutely okay with it. But I want to ask you guys, did either of you see that GameStop Halo 5 commercial?
This is the one for the pre-order and you get Lux armor, right?
Yes,
that's... Yeah, it's a pretty good CGI. You know, it makes you pretty excited. I've also been kind of following along on the audio podcast clips on Halo in terms of some of that backstory. So, you know, I enjoy that. It's not enough to make me pre-order it at GameStop, but it makes me excited for the game.
Yeah, and I one of the reasons I like Destiny is there's so much co-op, so much player versus environment, PvE. When I buy Halo 5, it will be for the single-player story and anything they do co-op-wise. I don't see myself, just like I don't spend any time in the Crucible, I don't see myself doing any public, 5v5 or whatever matches, you know, Slayer or whatnot, Capture the Flag or whatnot. Unless we get a bunch of friends together, like we've done in past Halo releases, where we get all our friends together in a room, we kind of randomly pick sides and just have a good time. You know, so I'm hoping they do a lot of, you know, some of the things you can't do in Destiny, like have your own private room or private server and invite all your friends and, do a, you know, CTF game or things like that. I hope they do support it. And it would be nice to have some kind of co-op besides, you know, single player. I think we're all expecting a four-player, single-player co-op experience. It would also be nice to have something like a firefighter, you know, something like a horde or a zombie mode in there as well. But Zeus, did you see this? Did you have any opinions on it?
I just watched it, and you're right, it goes by so fast, I have to watch it again. and I was just going to say, as you were mentioning kind of all those kind of co-op modes, man, I would really love to see something more like Rainbow Six Vegas's. And I say Vegas, but it's been in the Rainbow Six series the whole time. I'd really like to see something like that Rainbow Six Vegas terrorist hunt mode. I just wish like every shooter game would do that, which is just basically a co-op mode to take down, you know, multiply placed enemies on every level game that's actually in the single player campaign. Would just be awesome.
Yeah, I think, was it episode 2? I think it was episode 2, maybe episode 3, where Mace Bite, my good friend, joined in, and we talked about how we'd love to have a Vegas 1 and 2, you know, collection or remastered edition for the Xbox One. Terrorist Hunt is just
absolutely a
total blast. It's a blast on the 360. It's a blast on the PC, although they never did fix that PC repeating machine gun issue that pops up now and again. But it is, I mean, I was just playing it, Mace and I were playing it at PAX East. So, great gameplay, absolutely. The next story I want to talk about. Sorry. Go ahead, Zeus.
No, I was just going to say, and I've been engaged this week in kind of a philosophical conversation about, HD remakes and, you know, do they make the same sense on the Xbox One that they do on the PlayStation 4? So I was just going to note in what you were saying about that Rainbow Six Collection. I mean, for me, I don't even need the single player campaign. Like, just stuff all the multiplayer maps in an HD collection and put it up on the Xbox Marketplace, and I would definitely pay for it.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, most of those games. I booted up Rainbow Six 3 the other day, and they have you can play that in 1080p. So you know the PC versions exist. So they should be able to do that. Maybe they'll surprise us, and they will do it. You know, the second big story I saw... go ahead, DB. Did you want to say something about that?
No, I was just going to say, I bet we could definitely come back to the idea of remastered collections, because there's going to be more of that coming out as we get closer to E3. You know, there's a few of those that are trickling out now, too. So be a good topic for next time.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have probably a month worth of shows just talking about everything that happened at E3. But, you know, the second thing I wanted to talk about that was kind of released or leaked this week was Black Ops 3, right? So we've been hearing little bits and pieces about it over the last couple of weeks, and it's really sounding exciting. So they're going to have a single-player campaign, which they've been okay, but they're going to have co-op in that single-player campaign. Plus, they're going to have zombies. And I just thought that was really cool. That, you know, it's really going to be from that Black Ops type of, hey, you can play the campaign yourself, you can play it with friends, you can go play some zombies if you just want to kill an hour with some buddies. So I'm hoping they have combat training. That was something I always loved. I haven't heard anything about that yet, but so far, I'm pretty excited about Black Ops. What about you guys?
I've never really gotten into the Black Ops. I've definitely played the Infinity Ward Call of Duty games, and not a whole lot on the Treyarch side. But at the same time, I love the fact that there's the potential for a co-op campaign. You know, I never played through the Battlefield 3 campaign, but World Voyager and I played all the way through the co-op stuff. So the fact that there's a co-op piece, I'm looking more forward to this. So I think that that's a piece that could be pull in some people that maybe, or a nice way for people who mainly play the multiplayer to grab a bud or two and jump over into the co-op stuff, because it's a natural partnership that they've been playing as they've been playing online.
Yeah, what do you think, Zeus? You got any feelings about Black Ops 3?
All over the place with the Call of Duty franchise. You know, I look back and think back now, and definitely I feel like with Modern Warfare, the first one, said, you know, since then, you know, I bought Modern Warfare 2, played a couple sessions with CAG, and then just didn't play any more of the game. And then, you know, I said that I wasn't going to get back into that franchise or buy those games, but... Yeah, I wound up buying. I don't even remember what was the most recent release that released on Xbox One and PS4.
It was Advanced Warfare, the Kevin Spacey one, as him as the bad guy.
Yes, yeah. So I bought that one, you know, and because there aren't a lot of games for the Xbox One and PS4 still, in my opinion, and I bought it and I played a little bit of the single player campaign, and got on multiplayer once or twice, and then just haven't really played it. I mean, I'm glad I have the game, because like I said, I don't think there's a lot on PS4, and I'll probably eventually get back around to it, but I'm definitely on this roller coaster anytime something comes out about Call of Duty, because I feel like I could like it and get back into it, but I just haven't been able to get back on that wagon yet.
Great. Am I reading the announcements right? Is that there's female character mods as well? Is that what you read?
I did not read that. That would be really good if there was. That would be really cool.
Yeah, I agree. I'm reading an article on PC Gamer where they're talking about playing as a female criminal assassin. Maybe it's still early, but if you have the choice between a male and a female character, I know there's online there's plenty of both genders that play Call of Duty, and so I think that would be smart of them to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think, you had a recent article we discussed in a previous podcast about the mix between men and women, and there are a lot of women gamers out there. I think Destiny did it very well. Their models, the characters look great, both the guys and the gals. I mean, they pull it off with no problems at all. And, even Vegas, you go back to Vegas 1 and 2, they had female characters in there. And that's one thing that I think Vegas nailed that even Black Ops didn't. In Vegas, you ranked up in single player, terrorist hunt, co-op, multiplayer. You ranked up in everything. And that was the one disappointing thing with Black Ops and Black Ops 2 is while you could play combat training, the rank you gained there was totally separate from your rank you gained in the multiplayer. But yeah, I definitely support. All games should have that. I mean, it's doable, and many games have been doing it for a long time. Well, and the last big story we had this week, which I'm just looking at the time, we really don't have to get into today, so I will save it for next week, is Destiny and the House of Wolves and all the goodness that is coming to us.
Yeah.
So let's do this. We're going to put that on a shelf. I know we all play Destiny, and we're going to we'll make that a big section of next week's podcast because we're already over our allotted time. And so bring your Cliff Notes on Destiny House of Wolves. If you have not watched the Twitch stream, which DBQ, I think it was you who posted it in the forums, and then I went back and watched the recording of it, you really want to watch it. I think it starts at 6 minutes in, but it was a lot of good info.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff there, and they're going to be doing one for the next 3 or 4 weeks, so we certainly can put this on the shelf and come back to it, because next week we'll have more stuff to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that, we're out of time for this episode of Band of Gamers Podcast. Zeus, anything else you wanted to add before we call it a show and wrap it up?
Good. Hope everybody gets a chance to go see Age of Ultron this week.
Is it really out this week already? Gee whiz.
Yep, launches this week.
Caught me off guard, too. It releases this Friday. So I'll be taking a day off or a half day off from work to make sure I go see the first matinee in my local theater.
Nice. How about you, DBQ? Anything you want to say before we wrap up the show?
No, I'm just glad, Zeus. It's great to have you here. More voices on the podcast, more opinions is always a good thing. We have some good discussions here, so hopefully you can keep coming back, and hopefully the community enjoys it too.
Yes, it's great having you on the show, and we'll be looking for your first impressions of Age of Ultron next week, if you're able to attend the podcast. And we'll also have our roundtable discussion on the House of Wolves. So exciting podcast for next week. And with that, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening to the show. My name is Greylock3491. I was joined this week by DBQ Hams and Zeus Adamus, and we want to thank you all for listening. You can catch all of us at casualadultgamers.com. And as always, peace.